Thank you. DMH Projects for Kieran Barnes. Thank you.
Well, good evening, everyone, and thank you for the opportunity to speak tonight about the Housing Diversity DPA. My name's Kieran Barnes. I'm a town planner with Acoustics Planning and Design. And I'm speaking here on behalf of Daniel Harris, who is the part owner of land at 934 Marion Road, Sturt. Now, for background, Daniel has undertaken a number of developments in the city of Marion and also lives in Sturt for a period of 8 years. So we're here to, show our support for the policy changes proposed for properties along Marion Road and Sturt. Specifically, we strongly support the new suburban activity node zone in this location, which we believe will help to revitalise this portion of the council area, while also helping to achieve the DPA's aim of providing housing diversity. Now, as you heard, the land in question is located near the southern end of Marion Road. It contains a house that's probably seen better days, and adjoins a small group of shops to the north on the corner of Macklin Street that probably not trading at their best capacity either. Access is provided by a service lane, which runs along the western side of Marion Road. Now, the proposed development, which you have before you in concept form, has been designed with the new suburban activity node zone in mind. So it's a mixed-use development of three storeys in height, which will feature a small-scale shops at ground level with residential apartments above. Now, it's still early days in the design process, but the initial concepts show approximately 16 apartments with a focus on providing affordable housing. Now, the design responds to the DPA's desire to direct development activity towards arterial roads and protect and introduce greater protection for the Marion Plains area in terms of higher densities. So one of the exciting aspects of this particular proposal is that it's seeking to embrace the Nightingale housing model, which is a new concept for residential living that is emerging from Melbourne. This model, which is being driven by a group of architects, is seeking to provide sustainable housing opportunities within existing communities. And these architects intend that the model will provide an alternative to the high-rise apartment living in the CBDs, while also taking the pressure off the fringe areas in terms of sprawl. It's also placing more housing near existing services and facilities such as public transport, recreation, employment, education and shopping. So for this reason, the land along Marion Road and Sturt is ideally located for this type of development, given the proximity of Flinders University, Westfield Shopping Centre, the Warraparinga Wetlands and the Tonsley Innovation District. It's also well serviced by public transport. Now, the Nightingale housing model is also driven by triple bottom line objectives, which aim to balance the economic, environmental and social aspects of the development. So this means that the developments are seeking to provide affordable housing with environmentally sensitive design features, which reduce energy consumption while also providing opportunities for residents to meet and interact. For example, the design includes a communal rooftop garden where each resident is allocated an area to grow their own vegetables and fruit. There will also be a communal barbecue area where residents can interact. Now, from what we're told, the social aspects of the Nightingale housing developments have been their biggest strength. By providing opportunities to bring people together, they're creating a sense of community in these areas. So we also believe that a mixed-use development in this location will help to support the existing shops along Macklin Street there, while also encouraging more cycling and walking in the neighbourhood. Now, as you've heard, inevitably new development proposals raise concerns about increased traffic. So we've asked Phil Weaver, who's a well-respected and experienced traffic consultant, to provide some initial advice on the likely impact of a mixed-use development in this location. And that advice is included in the submission. So the advice shows that the development would not generate a significant increase in traffic and would not exceed the capacity of this service road. So in closing, we'd like to commend the Council for the policy changes proposed in this area, which will allow this exciting development to proceed, and we look forward to working with the Council on the next stage of the project. Thank you.
No questions? Thank you very much. Ian Gardner, Warradale. Robert Kennedy, Warradale. Diane Williams, Oaklands Park. Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor and Councillors. I have a PowerPoint presentation as well, please.
We'll wait till we've got it up before we start time. We're just loading up the presentation for this submission. Is that the right
yes,
one?
Thank you.
You can start.
I'm also speaking tonight on behalf of George Abdillah. Both George and I own properties to the east of Marion Shopping Centre along Pemberton Street, which runs sort of right beside Diagonal Road, the housing area in there. We actually support the Marion Area Policy 10 because of the wider block sizes for road dwellings. Currently the road dwellings are only 7 metres wide and the proposal is to increase this to 9 metres. Blocks need to be wider as cars are not fitting into garages. This is opposite us, a three-row dwelling house. None of the vehicles fit in the garage, so therefore these three-row dwellings have been reduced to only one car park for each house. Because of housing affordability, these houses are actually rented out, so we've actually had 9 cars for 3 houses on the street, with 3 in the car parking space only for buildings and 6 parked on the road. As a result of this, they park opposite our driveway, so it's a hazard getting in and out of our vehicle. It's reduced Pemberton Street to one-way traffic. We also almost been hit twice on our pushbikes on the street because of the parking hazard. We've had our bins not collected because there's nowhere to put them, so I'm suggesting to Council that if they go ahead with these block developments, that they actually consider space for bins as well as car street parking, because it's a big problem. I've got more photos if you'd like to go ahead and this is opposite our house. If you keep going along, you'll see Pemberton Street onto the next one as well. You can see the vehicles don't fit in. This is Pemberton Street. This is a corner of Trop Grove. So when people come onto Pemberton Street, it's one-way traffic. They can't see vehicles coming from the north end, and you often see vehicles almost colliding there. So if you keep scrolling through, you'll see this is the problem here. This is Trop Grove onto Pemberton Street. If you keep going through the photographs, this is the car parking right near our house and how close vehicles are parking. If you keep going along, that's a view from our driveway. If you go to the next slide, shows Dwyer Street development. This is Dwyer Street on the corner of Dwyer and Johnson Road. It's a roundabout there. This is 4 houses that are just being built at present. There's no car parking for these houses. They've also got these narrow garages. Now, not everybody owns a Suzuki Swift. Most vehicles, apparently 4-wheel drives are the most common size vehicle being sold in the market. They simply will not fit in these garages. If you go to the next... this, I'd like to know how a vehicle's actually going to get in that garage. This is a development in Dwyer Street at the moment, and the houses aren't finished.
Also, due to smaller block sizes, people are still growing tall shrubs and trees well above fence height in front of neighbours' bedroom windows on 350 square metre blocks, 90 centimetres from the windows, blocking out light, blocking gutters, dropping debris into neighbours' properties, overhanging clothesline, causing potential damage to pavement and buildings. We suggest that the policies, if we're going to have these such small subdivisions, they need to be similar to New South Wales Wingicarity Shire Council, which prevents bushes, trees or shrubs planted of any kind that grow taller than the fence height from being planted along the boundary. I mean, we love greenery, but it's causing us a big problem with our neighbours, and we want to get along with our neighbours, but we also want to have a green suburb. And the other thing is Pemberton Street and Trotgrove area to the Eastern Marion Shopping Centre is actually a Marion Shopping Centre overflow car parking area. And the area is really busy with shopping, with the shops. People are parking all in this area, and this is just exasperating the already problem with the current developments. Also with the small developments, when we had to build our house, we had to meet energy rating requirements, but as soon as a development is small and built to our north that overshadow our house, close to our house, it took all our energy rating away, and we have no light in our house in the middle of winter to our north facing windows when our house is north facing. So it's a really big problem, and I think it's a difficult one for the council to sort of try and please everybody, but I just wanted to point out these things we're facing in this area which has all these developments happening. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Just wait. Could you please sit back down? We've just got some questions.
Sorry.
Yeah, thank you.
Sorry.
We've just got some questions.
Sorry.
It's just one question. It's really from me to staff as much as anything. I thank you, Ms. Williams, for the slides in particular, because it's actually this sort of problem that set us on the road as a council to try and do something about our planning regulations, because there are obvious problems there. But these questions to planning staff, these boxes where a garage can't even fit a sort of standard sedan car, how can they be approved?
Look, I couldn't get into a specific detail. I mean, it's difficult from photographs, but there are standard garage widths that accommodate 80th percentile vehicles. I'd be surprised if those vehicles couldn't fit in those garages, but again, if people can send information and we can review that and have a look. But
I'm sorry, but they can't fit in, and if you got in there, you'd never get out. And I'm not trying to be critical of what the council have previously approved, but it's a big problem for us. And we actually, I've bought a house on a 380 metre square block, and we've put a double garage in, and we have two car parks out the front, so we can fit four garages on that small block because we have a wider frontage, and it's very important. I mean, yeah. And as blocks are getting smaller, it's so hard to have nice green areas, and you know, for your plants and birds and everything like that. I mean, people like green areas, but as soon as the neighbours plant all these bushes in front, your house's energy rating goes. You're looking at trees overhanging your fence right 90 centimetres from your windows, and it's such a shame because, I mean, you're trying to make housing affordable for people and have housing for future generations, but at the same time, there's all these other things that you're sacrificing.
Thank you very much for your submission. So we've got G. Abdullah on the agenda, but you mentioned you're speaking for him as well. Yep. Okay, I've got Jan Lee from Oaklands Park. Okay, moving into the Marion area, Peter Wheatcroft. Thank you, Peter.
What you speak about has already been spoken to, but if I don't read it, I'll get muddled up. I applaud the Marion Council for looking at housing diversity within the Marion area, and I'd like to focus on urban heat islands, microclimate changes, livability of dwellings, green space and child development. We live in Marion, and the two residents on our eastern boundary have been replaced with six new homes, going from a possible 10 residents to a potential 26 residents. Three of these homes have their backyards entirely paved with dark paving, have no verandas or shade of any kind, and the other three houses are not yet occupied and are on the market. On our western side there is another residence that has been replaced with two new homes about 15 years ago. These are more livable with more yard area, green space, parking and verandas. As Diane Williams has mentioned, the planning department must change their guidelines for garages in new dwellings as modern cars don't fit inside and people have to unload before parking. Neighbours in these homes have complained that they can drive into their garage but can't open the door to get out. If they can't park in their garage, it creates congestion in our streets with parking. People are also deterred from effectively developing their courtyard spaces because they do not have access into their yards. Even when they have side access, the side access is not big enough for bins or lawn mowers to go down the side. So this discourages the natural green space development. These issues are not just concerned with land size, but the livability of the dwelling. I recognise the council is in the process of addressing these issues in the Marion area to create a lower density construction. For us, it's a little bit late because we're living in a little mini city. I'd like to see the Southern Hills policy rolled out across the Marion area with innovative architectural styles addressing and reflecting microclimate initiatives. The dark coloured pavements, dark brickwork, dark roof colours all go towards creating urban heat islands in our community, little hotspots throughout our community. In a paper presented by Mina Zahara in 2016 titled Housing and Microclimate, Improving Livability in Adelaide, they came up with these findings. The replacement of dark pavement for a more reflective or a high, I'm not sure how you pronounce this, but a bodo. Anyway, it's a more reflective material to reduce surface temperatures. It doesn't mean shiny, it just means more reflective. It reduces the surface temperatures by 7%, and with the addition of trees, the reduction is about 20% through a large-scale implementation, not just one tree outside one resident, but multiple trees along the road. Green space affects thermal comfort conditions and human health, as well as energy consumption and air quality. The focus appears to be on developing energy-efficient housing to reduce our energy consumption without good planning and good design of dwellings. As in the new dwellings next to us, they might meet energy-efficient housing, but they are black brickwork, black roof and no verandas. The dwellings like this with a high thermal heat mass indicators, is there any wonder we are having problems with our electricity supply and the cost? Why are we not changing building design, exploring new materials, colours and innovative ideas? Even Don Burke once mentioned that house guttering needs to look at as we live in a country where our land is starved of water. Then in urban areas we collect our water, not allowing it to reach the ground, and all the subsequent problems associated with cracking, and then we pipe it into the stormwater. New houses have rainwater tanks, insufficient in size, with the overflow redirected into the stormwater. If plumbed into houses, they're off disconnected after purchase. This idea is not working effectively. And finally, as a preschool educator in the Marion area, over the years I've observed a reduction in gross motor speed in many 4 to 5 year olds. Their running gait is still the short side-to-side gait of a toddler instead of the long stretched-out development run. Children need space to run, and it needs preferably in their backyard. If not, they need to have easy access to green spaces. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Meredith Reeve. Thank you.
Good evening. I come from the Oaklands Estate. In relation to the yellow zone of the Oaklands Estate under your proposed changes, it now includes a part of a purple zone. This is new. This area covers Marion Oaklands Road down to Beaufort Terrace. I and many other residents in the estate have concerns with this purple zone, mainly due to traffic congestion. Cars already have problems entering and exiting the main Coles driveway, which is the Parcom shopping centre. Now with the new western exit, cars are avoiding the main entrance because it's difficult to navigate, and they're exiting via this western entrance, going down onto Oaklands Road and trying to attempt a U-turn to get back onto Marion Road again. This is causing quite a lot of traffic congestion and also nearly borders Beaufort Terrace. This area is on a bend in the road, and then cars coming out of Beaufort are also having difficulty navigating the traffic in a bend and getting along to two sets of roadings. Also, a lot of other cars from the Coles Parcom shopping centre are coming down Whitla around Beaufort and Mitchenbury and back down to exit that area as well. So if more shopping, which is the next point I'm going to make in a minute, on Chambers, if more shopping centre and buildings are developed there and housing, the congestion of traffic there is going to be even more problematic. I don't know if you're aware, but in the Oaklands estate, it's a little triangle, basically dead ends, with only three entrances leading off Oaklands Road to get in and out of the estate. They're being Melanto, Pethick and the Beaufort Terrace. These streets have to accommodate all the residents of the existing estate, the Marion Railway Station day trippers and the Westminster School people dropping off and picking up, who quite frequently use this side of the train line rather than navigating around the bends to get onto the correct side of Westminster. They can just cut through. So with all this traffic and more traffic, we're going to have a problem. Chambers Street, which was dot point 6 on your proposed plan, this is already narrow and congested road with cars entering off Marion Road. There's angled parking on Chambers Street, so when you're backing out, you're trying to navigate cars coming in off Marion Road, backing out, cars looping the car park looking for a park because it's already congested. So we propose further shopping centres in those underdeveloped houses that obviously want to demolish and put up new buildings is going to make it quite hazardous. We're getting a lot of children on skateboards now due to the skate park that's in the zone. Unsupervised children, 8 to 12 years old, they're skating around in groups, and they quite often calling into Coles, getting something to eat and just zooming across Chambers Street and down Mitchenbury, and cars find it quite difficult. One day one of those children will probably get hit. The overshadowing also into Chambers Street with that proposed developing, I've spoken to residents in the Mitchenbury, which is the street behind that. They're quite concerned about their devalued properties and overshadowing of their properties. And one of them was concerned that a car park was going to be put into the back of the residence to minimise the overshadowing. But then they said that all their backyards are going to be very noisy and lack of privacy due to car parks being put in the back of those buildings. So I'm not sure about that. Dot point 9 involves the minimum state site frontages of the Oaklands estate. This is one of my main concerns, to encourage more detached dwellings. Oaklands estate is a yellow character zone, as pre-mentioned. It was given this zoning by its trees and bird life. The area has a large 100-year-old gum trees and many varieties of other trees, providing habitat to kookaburras, galahs, parrots and the odd koala found wandering the estate. The wetlands at the western end has also encouraged more wildlife to the area, which we all enjoy. Therefore, this should be preserved. Larger blocks give open space and gardens for residents to play, do gardening or just relax. There are enough multi-dwellings and in over overcrowding areas, as per seen by the other residents here today, without having to destroy this little area. Due to the trees, the road sewer pipes have roots and require regular maintenance from the SA Water. More dwellings will make the blockage of the septic system more problematic as well.
30 seconds.
The estate roads are narrow and being installed in the 50s, so they will not tolerate the curbside parking and other issues that have been discussed before. And we have a concern also about some persons just bought a house in Pethick Street, being guaranteed that they'll be able to put a subdivision in there like Hammerhead, because it's only got a 17 metre frontage, and this actually is against all ruling of the Oaklands estate, so we don't know how the land agent told us that this was being granted, so we don't know how that's happened.
Thank you for your submission. Any questions? No. Thank you so much. Mary O'Connor, thank you.
Mayor, councillors, staff and residents, thank you for the opportunity to address you. I live in the Marion Plains area and I'm generally in support of the changes previously mentioned, which include increased frontage and off-street parking. However, I'm here to express some health concerns about the Marion Road urban corridor. I live one house back from Marion Road and I'm very concerned about the effect on my health, my family's health and the health of anyone who lives near a main road. Many others are concerned too. When I was looking up information on this topic, I found an article written by the Oxford University Practical Ethics Centre in 2014 and it was called "Living Near a Busy Road Can Kill You." The World Health Organization also declared in 2014 that air pollution was then the world's biggest single environmental threat to health, with 7 million deaths worldwide in 2002. And while many of those deaths occur in perhaps what some people might call developing countries, it's also definitely an issue in developed countries as well. So the current situation is that we have transport-oriented development in the Greater Adelaide 30-year plan, and it's also common interstate and overseas. And it has a good aim, to cluster people around public transport so that they use cars less, they use public transport more, you increase population density and reduce urban sprawl. And I can understand that there's a desire to take pressure off other areas so that they can retain better amenity. However, you can't necessarily import an idea which is successful in Europe, for example, and expect it to work here. Australian cities are often very different to European cities, which tend to be compact, have excellent public transport systems, including off-road systems, and have strong disincentives for people to drive cars. I referenced a conversation article in my submission which discusses some of these issues, which is called "Retrofitted Cities Are Forcing Residents to Live with Planning Failures, We're Due for a Rethink." And this was written in 2017. The areas I'd like to briefly touch on with health risks are mainly air pollution and noise pollution, and if I get time, a little bit on light pollution and heat stress, although that has been alluded to by other speakers. So number one, air pollution. The United States Environmental Protection Agency site talks about pollutants that are emitted directly from cars on roadways. These include particulate matter, carbon monoxide, oxides of nitrogen, and hundreds of other chemicals which are emitted by motor vehicles. And I'm sure our own EPAs have similar information. Motor vehicles also emit compounds that lead to the formation of other pollutants in the atmosphere, such as nitrogen dioxide and ozone. Roadway traffic also emits brake and tyre debris and can throw road dust into the air. And many of the pollutants found near roadways have been associated with adverse health outcomes, especially for some high-risk groups such as young children. These risks include respiratory, higher rates of asthma onset and aggravation, impaired lung development in children, also include cardiovascular disease, preterm and low birth weight infants, childhood leukaemia, possibly dementia and premature death. So it's not a very cheerful wrap-up. Secondly, noise pollution. And I found another article on the conversation about this called "Can Noise Pollution Damage Your Health?" from February 2016. And just in case anyone's not aware, this website has short articles written by academics and researchers and edited by professional editors so that people such as myself can have access to research without being an academic. So this article shows research indicates that noise pollution elevates our stress levels, and this in turn increases our cardiovascular risk factors, such as blood pressure, blood fats and blood glucose concentrations. It then leads to cardiovascular illnesses such as heart attack and stroke. Our emotional response to noise pollution can also be significant, so much so that it has a specific name, noise annoyance. And this describes the negative feelings noise can create.
30 seconds.
I'll skip over light pollution and heat stress, but I just wanted to give a special mention to the signs on steroids. I would hate to be near a main road and having some of those really, really bright signs flashing on and off. So where are the solutions? Obviously, people are working on the solutions and it's very difficult. What would be best is to increase distance between people and traffic, and that's not that hard. Maybe the driverless electric cars will bring that in for us. But in the meantime, we need to look at things such as tightening building regulations. The green building level of 6 is obviously not working, and there are other measures that can be used as well.
Thank you. Any questions from the panel? No. Thank you very much for your submission. Robert Riggs from the Marion area. Robert Riggs, thank you.
Okay, I hope people at the back can hear me. My name's Robert Riggs and I live in a character area, Zone 15, as proposed in the DPA that's been put up by the council. I've lived in Marion Council area for 65 years, which is all but 2 years of my life. I've seen many changes and will see many more. Changes up till now have mostly been orderly. I would like to hope that that is the case as we move forward, particularly in regard to planning, and because of the importance this DPA. But I'm not liking what I'm seeing in other council areas, where councils have kowtowed to the state government, desires to for the various outcomes, mainly increase in population. Luckily, residents are now taking action, but only after DPAs have been enacted, which is way too late. So hopefully our council will take some notice of what is being said today and what has been put up in submissions. Yes, there's room for development, but a brownfield development has to be sensitive to achieve good local outcomes and existing ratepayers not being hung out to dry. In my particular area, which happens to be a residential character zone, there is changes proposed. Our area is well known and highly regarded and sought after due to the sensible infill that we have experienced. We're not immune to it. We ask then why the change to frontage and area sizes when the majority of character zones have had no change. Because of our proximity to the Oakland's wetlands, ours is a buffer zone for much wildlife. Birds are increasingly fighting for territory in my backyard, which has still, luckily, because it's on a normal sized block, has got some trees. If my block was to succumb to further subdivision, there would be no trees in my yard, none out the front on the footpath, and my house would become probably a couple of nondescript boxes. The council planners have stated that they do not envisage the changes will have too much impact. Myself and other residents ask why there needs to be any change at all. Our area will still succumb to subdivision with no changes. I ask that council consider just what the gains will be. It will be certainly not the bird life, and it will not be an increased tree canopy. Am I being elitist? I think not. I have endured many years in Marion and have worked hard to enjoy what Marion provides. The other concern is Chamber Street Neighbourhood Centre. There are too many questions on this, but it is a major change that is a questionable outcome for a number of existing residents. Can the street, which is a dead-end street effectively, handle this increase in use? I think not. And that alone should be setting off alarm bells on what is mooted by the proposed DPA. The area is way too small for a development that is integrated with the existing neighbourhood centre and existing residents. There is no buffer zone, and that is because there is just not enough room. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much. Martin Ailes, apologies. Thank you.
Good evening. I've actually been asked to speak for Rebecca Robertson and Carly Sarah as well. If the Mayor and Councillor are okay with it, I might cut that back to, say, less than 10 minutes, rather than speaking for all three for 15. I think the audience and everyone here would rather just get on with it, and a few things have been covered off already, so if that's okay. All right, my name's Mark Nails. Myself, combined with Rebecca over the back there, we've built in excess of 150 dwellings in the Marion Council area since 2002. We're both fully licensed builders and supervisors, unrestricted. We have built a diverse range of housing throughout the Marion Council area over the years. And some of that housing, for example, includes 175 Sturt Road, which is 12 student accommodation units, one-bedroom units on 660 square metres of land. What's interesting about that type of project that I built there is it flat out does not work. And some of the reasons that it doesn't work is when I proposed my application to Gary Brinkworth at the time, the comments given to me from the planning staff were increase the amount of dwellings and we'd like to see you have 6 car parks for the 12 dwellings instead of the 9 that you propose, and we would prefer to see motorbike parking and pushbike parking instead of car parking. I can tell you now, after managing that project as a caretaker, it's been fairly disastrous. So I think whilst I'm coming from the angle of an experienced developer and builder, I also want to come from a compassionate angle with the majority of the comments tonight about things like car parking issue that's been created through dense development, and hence my position that I don't agree with the majority of the proposed new plan that's been put forward. And we'll come back to that in a moment. I do believe that there is fundamental flaws in the policy that's been proposed. It's quite clear that it has not been written by somebody who has any long-standing property development experience, and it's also got a fairly limited viewpoint that it doesn't really consider impacts of sort of well-based environments and issues at the moment around the environment, you know, considerations about the things that we have to bring into policy now, such as energy efficiency, open spaces, you know, community living spaces, you know, solar power, battery storage, all of those types of things. Some of the fundamental problems around the proposed development that council perhaps haven't considered yet, and the councillors and the mayor, is that your ability to finance and fund these projects through standard banking institutions or private lending practices, the types of development that these policies are pushing for, it's physically impossible for someone like myself who perhaps may be doing okay financially. You literally cannot go and borrow the money to do the types of developments, to do a 4 or 5 or 6 storey development that's proposed. We're not Melbourne, we're not Sydney. We don't have the transport corridors to support it. We clearly don't have the car parking on street to support the current plan, let alone an even denser plan. While some of those developments may be designed, you know, with car parking considerations and bin storage within them, the financial aspect of doing those developments and undertaking them is a far different ball game to the type of development that's previously been done. Not that I necessarily even agree with all of that. The new policy does knock out a lot of the mum and dad developers, which in one part I can see where there's some benefits for that, because we don't get some of the issues that we've seen tonight created by people who are just doing it for the sake of financial benefit. But it also knocks out the majority of builders, it knocks out the majority of trades, because as soon as we start talking about commercial projects, people like myself who have been fully licensed and established builders for a long period of time, we're no longer allowed to do those type of commercial developments because our license restrictions don't allow us, even though we have unrestricted dollar value on our license, we have limitation to 3 stories, and most builders do. The majority of trades do, and it creates a whole bunch of other issues around working at heights and the types of induction processes that you have to have for that. There would be a huge loss to trades, and you know, at the moment Rebecca and I employ more than 50 people full time on an ongoing basis within our business models. They would no longer have any work at all if this policy was enforced as it stands. Apartment costs, regardless of the fact that they may on the surface and on paper appear as though they are a cheaper alternative, a more affordable housing. It is simply just factually incorrect. The reason that's factually incorrect is the apartment cost is around $2,200 per square metre. You have to fire rate between your floors. You need to bring in all sorts of fire hydrant systems. Lifts are mandatory across the majority of them. And obviously car parking is generally undercroft or underground. And it just creates huge development expense, which I believe, A, it is Adelaide. We've got to keep in mind what the sale price of these properties are. And B, it just blows most people out of the water when they go to apply for the finance. You can't build more than three dwellings through consumer finance. So as soon as you go over three dwellings, you fall into business finance. Okay, the loan-to-value ratio is reduced, which means you can borrow less, which means your personal contribution has to be far more. Okay, and it also means that your interest rate is higher, your valuation costs are higher, and I'm not talking about it going up by 3 or 4 or 5%. It goes up by literally hundreds of thousands of dollars. If you take a drive down Churchill Road and look at the outcomes there with the dense development, shop-top style development, go down there at peak hour. I really recommend everyone does that and have a look at the traffic issues that have been created along there. I think there's a complete lack in all policy. We're embracing things in 2016 and 17. We talk about same-sex marriages, we talk about the environment and all the things we have to do now. We need to embrace all of these sort of issues, not so much same-sex, but obviously the environmental side of things. And we really need to make that part of our policy. We're not making any consideration towards solar, north-facing roofs. I don't even understand why it's even legal for someone to build a house with a black roof. I don't understand how that can be possible. I grew up in a house where my dad went up every 10 years and took the can of white paint up there and kept the roof white. Mum and Dad, even with the heat the last week or two, out the front, pull the blinds down on a west-facing front house at Flagstaff Hill. So we need to bring some of those basics back. There is no requirement within any development policy or proposed development policy that brings a consideration into energy efficiency, because in the past, as a council policy or enforcing the council policies, planning staff have always said, no, that's all to do with the building code, building rules. We don't get involved in that. Whereas I think that does need to become part of the policy. We're not creating areas of open space where individuals can seek health benefits from that within courtyard developments. Keeping in mind I've built hundreds of courtyard homes and also owned the majority of those. As a developer, I buy the land as well. There's a health benefit in having your own open space. Creating areas for rain absorption, vegetable gardens, things that are good for the environment. We're not proposing any of that within these development plans. We're not even talking about it. And I think the fact that we're not talking about it is seriously a concern in this day and age. The policy creates a large gap in the marketplace for social discrimination by default. If you start building apartment blocks, okay, and you fill them with perhaps leasehold tenants, rental type tenants, you have no control over the mix as a council. You don't have a control over whether someone sells a property or rents the property. Generally speaking, if we get a bad tenant in a single dwelling, we can control that. However, once we get into these bigger ghetto type environments where we put, 20, 30, 40 apartments in, we're creating social discrimination by default, because once you get one bad egg or bad tenant in there, you then take the rest of the apartment block down with it and people start to leave, and we've experienced that with our apartment blocks. If you go and look at 3 Diagonal Way, which I basically designed and bought with Rebecca, behind the Marion Swimming Centre there, we had 10 dwellings on 776 square metres of land. Yet we had one bad tenant in there. We've had one recently at Stewart Road who drove 3 other tenants out because of their behaviour. So not everybody does want to live in units. I believe that it's much harder for purchasers to obtain funding for units as well. There's some huge issues at the moment in eastern states around valuations not coming in for units and apartments. The 30-year plan does call for livability, climate change, sustainability and resilience and competitiveness as a state, all of which the proposed plan isn't considering, I believe.
Yeah, a question, thank you.
Okay, what are you proposing? I mean, let's hear what you propose. I mean, because we've had people here representing against smaller and smaller block sizes because of the associated problems. And, I mean, I'd like to hear what you say, because the rules that you make is for a developer, for yourself, are for everyone. I mean, there isn't a control for who comes and does a subdivision. So that means that the development policy has to control that more.
Oh, there we go. I believe that we need to have better design regulations, like we talk about car parking, off-street parking, things like that. We need to have better design regulations within the development plan that enforce developers, you know, so they do have to do some of those things that address some of those issues. Things like a car park shouldn't be 3 metres wide, it should be 3.3 metres wide perhaps. We need to make sure that we relax perhaps things like the facade rule on every time we go and build a two-storey home. They talk about the facade, 50% of the facade must be living area. Why can't we reduce that so we can make the car parking bigger? But we always battle with that, so we're reducing our car park size to make the window upstairs bigger when it doesn't need to be. We need to consider things like perhaps lower the rules around site coverage, make that better, but let's have a better ruling around private open space. There's been situations where I can't meet private open space rules, but they let me put a balcony, you know, up top at the front of a bedroom. But the reality is that balcony never gets used. So let's not worry about the rules that allow us to, you know, let's get rid of the rules that we can bend and make those rules more stringent and stricter. I'm a developer, don't get me wrong, but I believe we need a better set of rules and better design rules so we do fix those problems like you saw in the image earlier with the all the cars jammed up out on the street.
Thank you. Thank you for your submission. So that was for Rebecca and Carly and yourself, thank you. Great. I'm looking for the Did You Notice family. Fabian Boroni, thank you.
Thank you, members. I represent the Dedonatis family this evening. The Dedonatis family owns four contiguous properties on the southern side of Chambers Street at Parkholme and generally supports the proposed DPA for those reasons which were outlined in my submission. The Dedonatis family is, however, concerned about the current inconsistencies between the desired character statement 4 and principle 5 of the expanded neighbourhood centre zone and objective 3 and principle 1 of the same zone. For example, you have on the one hand the desired character statement advising that residential flat buildings, which by definition are wholly residential in nature, are envisaged. You also have principle 5 advising that dwellings do not need to be located above non-residential development if they are located on the southern side of Chambers Street. You then, on the other hand, have Objective 3 calling for a centre which only accommodates dwellings above non-residential development. You then also have both a standalone dwelling and a residential flat building being omitted from the envisaged forms of development which are listed under Principle 1. Given that objectives carry far more weight than principles from an assessment point of view, I respectfully request on behalf of my client that you consider amending the Objective 3 so that it reads a centre accommodating wholly residential buildings and residential development above non-residential development. For clarity, I prefer wholly residential buildings to residential flat buildings as the former term extends to all kinds of dwellings and all kinds of dwellings are currently envisaged within this zone. I also respectfully request on behalf of my client that you consider inserting the words dwelling on the southern side of Chambers Street and a residential flat building into the long list of envisaged forms of development under Principle 1. Addressing these inconsistencies now will allow for a smoother and less convoluted assessment process. Thank you again for your time this evening.
Thank you.
I have a
Sorry, yes, come back to the microphone, please.
It's really for our staff. I mean, that was a very technical and sound submission. I wonder if our planning staff have any immediate response.
Sorry, that's where I'll spanner into the works. I just wanted to make sure that this, when it comes time for an assessment...
Sometimes a spanner's what we need.
Yeah. It's just that you look at, unfortunately, or fortunately, objectives carry more weight than principles. And so when this gets assessed, I'm concerned on my client's behalf that even though the principals clearly contemplate wholly residential buildings on their properties, that the assessing officer, and rightfully so, is going to say, well, clearly the objectives only allow dwellings atop non-residential development, which is clearly not the case, hence the reason why I've made this submission.
Yeah, staff will certainly take that on board. It's something that we'll obviously be looking at. That particular locality is one that we've been looking at some revised policies over the last week. So, yeah, we'll inform elected members of where we land on that tomorrow.
It's by no means a criticism. We just want to make sure that it's right before the Minister signs off on it. Thank you.
Thank you for your submission. Simon Armstrong, Mitchell Park. Nicholas Ivan Woskery, Mitchell Park. Aidan Sabic, Glengowrie. Thank you.
I'll add some images to check it.
We're just loading the presentation to support the submission.
Okay. Good evening, Mayor and Councillors. As a resident of Glengowrie, I'd like to share my views on the Housing Diversity DPA, in particular those that affect Northern Policy Area 13, which will become known as Marion Plains Policy Area 10. My comments relate to being a resident and a homeowner in Glengowrie, where I plan on residing and raising my young family. I support the proposed changes to increase the frontage for detached and semi-detached dwellings from 9 metres to 10 metres, as it will reduce the number of future subdivisions. Glengowrie and surrounding suburbs have absorbed more than their fair share of urban infill and population increase. This has created several issues, and I'll focus on three of them today. That is infrastructure, public space and safety. Looking at infrastructure first, it has reached the point where local infrastructure is struggling to keep up with the population increase in parts of the council area. So looking at school infrastructure, from 2011 to 2017, enrolments at Glenelg Primary School have increased from 588 to in excess of 800, and that's from the My Schools website. Glenelg Primary School is now officially at capacity and cannot guarantee enrolment for those living in the school zone. In a recent Local Messenger article, which is up on the screen there, Glenelg Primary Principal Ray Taggart put the rapid growth down to the school's lovely feel and quality programs, but also an increase in subdivision in the district. She was quoted as saying, "My belief is, if you drive around the streets in our catchment area, so many houses are being knocked down with two houses put on the site," end quote. So a family living in the area planning to send their children to the local public primary school now cannot be guaranteed enrolment and may have to enrol their children in a school further afield. The enrolment at the school is now officially capped at 800 students by the department and cannot be increased through more classrooms due to the small footprint of the school site. The local kindergarten is also turning away dozens of families each year, and this problem will no doubt flow on to secondary schools in the coming years. If we can move on to my next image, which is to look at... hopefully it's the one. No, there's one Google Map image, sorry. Open space, sorry. The next one along, I think. So now turning to public spaces, this Google Map image shows a view of the heart of Glengowrie. So in the heart of Glengowrie, there's only one small public park, that's Stanley Street Reserve. Others are more than 1 kilometre away. You can see that green area on that map. To make matters worse, only about 40% of that park is usable recreational space, as most of it is a car park and locked tennis courts used exclusively by a tennis club. Where a block is subdivided and multiple dwellings built, the backyards in most cases are very small. Many of these dwellings are now being occupied by young families. Not only do the children lack a decent amount of outdoor play space, but for pockets of the suburb, there is very, very little usable recreation space within 10 to 15 minutes walk. These kids and residents of the suburb are missing out on having adequate recreation space close to them. The next issue I wanted to talk about is safety. So if we flick to the image of a view of my street, the street parking in the bottom image, sorry. With more houses on each street, there is now a lot of on-street parking. Traditional size houses with long driveways, carports, garages, etc. can accommodate a fair amount of off-street parking. Townhouses and courtyard homes are more likely to have vehicles parked on the street, even where they have a double garage. At most time of the day, you'll find streets lined with cars on both sides. The photo of my street shows this. With a lot of kids living in the area, many play in the footpath in their front yards, probably due to lack of nearby recreational space. With parked vehicles on the street, pedestrians have limited visibility of cars approaching, and cars would not see children until they have driven past. This is increasingly becoming a real safety issue. You can see in the photo, we're fortunate enough that my street is quite wide, whereas others aren't so, and on other streets you would see cars parked on each side with not enough space for larger vehicles, including emergency service vehicles, to pass through. Now, the last point I wanted to touch on is housing mix. So if we move back to the image I had of the house being bulldozed, it could be argued that current development rules allow for less desirable properties to be bulldozed for multiple modern properties, thus improving the aesthetics of the suburb. While this may have been true in the past, a lot of the dwellings now being developed would have made fantastic family homes, including this one shown here. However, these are now being targeted by developers. On my street and the two adjacent streets, approximately 30% of original homes have been demolished, with two or more dwellings put on each site.
30 seconds.
Meaning more than 50% of dwellings on these streets are now townhouses or courtyard homes, and continuing to grow rapidly. I believe we have an adequate mix of housing types, and it's time to preserve the remaining houses so we have a mix of suitable housing available in the suburb going forward. In summary, by increasing the frontage requirements, it will dramatically reduce the number of properties that can be developed in the policy area, therefore not making the serious issues affecting residents of Glengowrie and similarly positioned suburbs any worse. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Zohi Hussain, Plimpton Park.
Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Hussain? Yes? No? Okay. Looking for Andrew Jenner? Nathan Singh, Plimpton Park? Thank you.
Yes,
they're just bringing it up for you now. We're just bringing up the presentation for the submission.
Including numerous council DPAs. Also, in terms of consultation closed less than a week ago, so I do have a reservation about the rush on this DPA. I'm undoubtedly Dipti are putting pressure on council before caretaker and state government election occurs, but there's a realisation that the DPA will affect the built form for 100 years, so it needs to be thought through. Regardless of Dipti's and your staff's advice, it is a council DPA and your decision. My submission that's before you covers 5 recommendations, and the slides support that. So first click, please. My first recommendation was regarding the boundary of the urban corridor zone in Plimpton Park, which bound along Herbert Street. I've recommended that it goes mid-block. Next click, please. The reason for this is Herbert Street is part of the original 1890s subdivision of Plimpton Park. And if you actually look at the built form, the character is the same on both sides. Now, in terms of the policy that's proposed, it's a 1 metre setback, 0 side setbacks, and 12.5 metre high. Just click. that shows you what the built form is proposed for this streetscape. I would argue that is not a cohesive streetscape, and in fact detrimentally affects the character area on the western side council is trying to create. Next slide, please. My next recommendation is a suburban activity zone. Click, please. It's along the tram line. Click, please. As you know, tram line, Mike Turner Bikeway, it's adjacent to Plimpton Park, which is a pre-automobile walkable suburb. Click, please. The development to date, or in recent times, has been two for ones with similar setbacks and similar car parking requirements. The substantive change in the policy is building heights. My proposal is that you actually upgrade this from other to core zone, which has similar building heights but actually has reduced car parking and reduced setbacks. The reason for this, if you click please, is I prefer a built form that is more sympathetic to the actual pedestrian environment that's there and enhances it. Next slide, please. My next recommendation was regarding the Plimpton Park Historic Conservation, proposing a historic conservation policy area. Click, please. There's the original 1890s plan. And this is just a sequence of some of the character in the area. You have 1910s, 1920s, 1930 houses. What's the commonality? Landscape gardens, low front fences, carports and garages weren't envisaged. They were add-ons, not under the roof form. So just click through next one, please. Click through next one, please. Click through next one, please. Repetitive pattern. Here is one that recently sold. Looks a bit, needs a bit of work. Click, please. This is it. The new owners have renovated it. They've built a sympathetic carport. They've landscaped the verge. The people that move into Plimpton Park value the character. Next slide, please. This can be enshrined in development plan policy. The proposed policy talks about preservation of the existing pattern, but it doesn't fully articulate that. I've written development plan policies for Harndorf, where it had preserved the Hoffendorf and Strasendorf development plan. For 20 years, the plan has struggled with what does that mean? We actually dug down and got out what the Hoffendorf and the Strasendorf was and enshrined that in the development plan to make it easier for development assessment officers, to make it easier for applicants. Next slide, please. My last...
30 seconds.
My last slide is about my first and last recommendation. It's about line of sight from evidence-based public policy through infrastructure planning. I've done that. I've done development yields, estimating the population. Click, please. Estimating what open space requirement you need for population growth. Click, please. What's missing in this DPA is what are the development yields, what's the population, what is that impact on transport, stormwater, open space. One of the examples I raised was the proposed zone for Marion and Crossroad there. There's power lines. The setbacks for the power lines and the requirement for regulation are not consistent with the DPAs. And you can, as I've shown as an example, where we've enshrined that in the development plan, and you've got, you can use it to make developer contributions, get developers to pay for it.
Just see if the panel's got any questions.
Thank you for your time.
Yeah, please.
Was that the last slide?
That was the last slide, except for one about questions.
Oh, that's good. The that historic area you were talking about.
Yes.
So can you specify what is proposed in the DPA for the area you were talking about?
It's and I wrote it in my submission, it's called a urban character. And it does some good stuff. It talks about, it doesn't articulate the character as much as I like, and I proposed a draft character statement in my submission.
So, sorry, it's zoned character, but you're saying that it could be better described.
Could be better enhanced because there's some issues with it. For example, quite rightly, it's got in there a PDC about low front fences. But in all fairness, unless it's a historic conservation policy area, that does not trigger for an applicant. They can go build a 2.1 metre fence. It's not development. it only is development if it's a historic conservation policy area.
Okay, thanks.
Councillor Telford?
With respect, I just make a quick point that over the last 2 years the Urban Planning Committee has been looking at development analysis yields. Obviously we don't put those out in great swathes through the messenger or anything, but we have been working on them.
Thank you for your submission.
Okay, thank you for your time.
Can I ask Julie Freeburn? Julie Freeburn, Southampton. PJ Edwards, Southampton. David Hawkes, Glendale. Julie Bellati, Glendale. Okay, that's the last of the formal list. We'd now like to get a bit of an indication if there is anybody that would like to have made a submission that wasn't on the list. If you could raise your hands, please. Mr. Wilkins, would you like to come forward? And for the record, if you could just state your name and what area you're speaking from, that would be great. And I'll come to you, sir, afterwards.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and councillors and other people here. I live at 25 Pleasant Avenue, Glendale, and we only just became aware in the last 4 days of the publication that was actually sent out by yourself, sir. So we had very little time to be able to make a submission or anything else. But there are a number of things that we would like to be looked at. And in particular, it is the change to Pleasant Avenue, Glendale. If you look at the map, which you have here, and you look at the publication, which was actually sent out by yourself, it is very difficult to see there was any change even there, because it's only one single street along against the tram line. Now, the changes that you're looking to do along that area from Malwa Street onwards in the westerly direction is that you can increase the height. In particular, one of the areas is about approximately 1,500 square metres on the corner of Malwa and Pleasant Avenue, which is where Puddle Jumpers have just set up their camp. And to put something like that in there, a three-storey building in that area against all the other buildings would look absolutely ridiculous. Not only that, it is also going to cause major congestion with regards to traffic. In Pleasant Avenue, we have a major traffic problem from the Beckman Street tram station. You have already put in two-hour parking on the southern side of that street to try and stop the congestion. People are parking there, and I have no problem with people using the trams. It is great. I think the tram service is fantastic, like the O-Bahn system out the other side of town. It's very good. But you've got to be able to provide parking for those people. I have sent to one of the councillors, I sent it to Nick, so that a suggestion of what I believe you should do, or to be looked at by the planning department, of how you can increase the parking and still widen the road usage for the cars on that Beckman Street corner. The other suggestion I have is that Glendale Community Centre, the car parking there in Clark Street is very seldom used during the day. It's used a lot more at night, weekends, quite a bit. But why couldn't some of that be made available to the people using the tram? On the corner of Malwa Street is quite a bend that right near our place, and quite honestly, I believe any day we're going to have a car turn up in our front yard, if not in the backyard. Hopefully one of the gum trees in the park will stop it. I would like you put in small traffic control units, the small bumps in the middle of the street. To be quite honest, they've made the condition worse, not better, right along there. What it needs is a similar situation in regards to speed humps as you have got in Churchill Avenue, which are the big rubber ones where they're too wide. They will stop the traffic. The amount of traffic that is now going through Pleasant Avenue from approximately 5:30 in the evening through to 8:30, 9 o'clock at night is phenomenal. The speed that they travel at and the noise that they're producing with those cars, the radar would have a wonderful night sitting down there. I think there'd be enough money to run the whole of Parliament. Jay Weatherill would get all his money for a year out of that. With the way they travel through there, it is ridiculous. It needs something done. Otherwise, I'm sorry, but the council will be having a major accident where somebody is going to get killed. I hope you will look at this, our submission. I do thank you for allowing me to speak. We were unable to get it in, as I said, but what I would like to know is how was your publication, sir, sent out to the people of that area? Because the people in my little group on the corner of there didn't receive it. I managed to find a copy.
30 seconds.
But we would like to know how it was actually sent out. It should have been directed to the residents personally. You have a database. Anywhere where there was a change, it should have been directed to the resident, not just a householder.
Could we have staff answer that, please?
There were, as part of the public consultation, so there are legislative requirements and then other consultation methods that council used that were above and beyond what the base requirements were. So in terms of legislative compliance, we had a notice in the Government Gazette. Most people wouldn't read that. The Advertiser, which again, it's expensive, probably most people wouldn't. The Local Messenger.
It's been stopped.
That we also sent letters out to residents as well, given the time constraints we used a private agency to help us deliver those out to the community.
Well, I'm sorry, but you better take the money back from the agency who you did it with, because they didn't deliver them to most of the people. A lot of people have said it here.
Thank you,
yeah.
I've got that feedback.
I would suggest you delay the payment to them and ask them where they did with them.
Sorry,
yes.
Yeah. Sure, thank you. Any other questions from the panel?
One more thing.
Yes.
Mr. Wilkins.
Wilkins, that's correct.
So you said you sent an email to one of the councillors, I think.
Yes, well, we've actually sent it to two of our councillors.
Right.
Who represent us. We also had that as a question also, because we understand that one of the councillors in our area is not able to vote on anything we put forward because there is a conflict of interest that he lives in the Glendore area.
I'll just correct you on that. Just about by virtue of the fact that the plan covers
the high residential area. Yes, I understand that.
I think pretty well all of the councillors technically have a conflict of interest,
yeah.
But there's a provision that says that where that occurs and you otherwise wouldn't have a meeting, then you can actually be in the meeting,
yes,
essentially, and I'm paraphrasing. But it's nonetheless a councillor's choice if they choose to exclude themselves. I mean, if 13 of us do that, won't be much of a meeting.
Won't be much there, yes.
But the councillor you refer to, that's their choice, right? But I just wanted to, I'm really just checking to see if you had a written submission which has come to staff in some way, or it's
well,
just
we sent a letter.
Yes.
We actually, in a hurry, we got hold of a submission that you could put in this application,
yeah.
Fill out a form, but unfortunately, it wasn't the correct form. And it ended up going to an urban planning in the city. There were three houses all did it. And they actually forwarded it to the Marion Council. Now, this was only done, and I have a copy of the correspondence from them advising that they had sent this
right
through to you. which I have the copy here, they said, sorry, you've used the wrong form, you sent it to the wrong place, it should have been directed to the Marion Council. Well, now, that was after your submission date closed.
Right. Well, thank you, Mr. Wilkins. I just wanted to explore all that because the communication point is really important, but I just want to assure you that your submissions tonight will be considered in the mix along with the 1,122 pages of written submissions we have.
Yes, I certainly appreciate that, but I would also suggest very strongly that you look at how things are sent out to people, because it is very important. And whether Glandore was an area that didn't get it, it's not a lot of change in the Glandore area. And as I said, if you look at the map that was sent out on the blue and white form and the letter from yourself, you can hardly even see that Pleasant Avenue Glandore was affected. It does not show up very well at all. It's not until you dig in and bury into the situation. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So, just in essence of the evening, any new information before I hand back over to Councillor Hutchison to close the session? Yes? Have we got time for questions? One question. Excuse me, sorry, I'm sorry to cut you off. We'd like it if you could just come and speak into the microphone so we can so we can record the information. And for formalities as well, just looking at Q&As, we'll probably close off after this one. Yeah, we don't want to kind of go into a Q&A session. We're looking for submission and views, but we'll allow the question. Thank you. If you could please go into the microphone.
Okay, Nicole Mitchell. As an alternative to accommodating more people into our council area than seems environmentally feasible, have council considered making a submission to the state government to plans for high-speed express transport links to areas around 80 kilometres from Adelaide? This would allow for satellite cities such as Murray Bridge, Victor Harbour and areas north to absorb population growth. This occurs in many other cities around the world. Copenhagen is a city with similar population to Adelaide and is proud of their low-rise decentralised status.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the question. I will hand over now to Councillor Hutchison to conclude.
Thank you, everyone that's stuck around to the end to hear everyone's submissions and been very respectful of each other's views throughout the submissions. We've heard views from opposite sides of the debate, and we'll certainly take all of these to full council meeting next week, and certainly those councillors that are here will have a chance to read through what's been discussed tonight, and a decision will be made next week in terms of what goes forward to the Minister. So thanks again for your time.
Thank you.